Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the SOM TV podcast. My name is Jason Wise. On today's episode, we are going to talk about one of my absolute favorite regions, not just to drink, but to visit, Germany. We're going to do a little German wine 101 with sommelier Claire Kopy and Brent Kroll, who is a food and wine sommelier of the year and the proprietor of the Maxwell Park Wine Bar in Washington, D.C. He knows his stuff. Before we get to Germany and all things German wine, I want to remind all of you that our brand new competition special, Tournament of Bubbles, where a bunch of contestants in the food and wine world sit down and try to blind taste the most impossible wine, is streaming right now on SOM TV. You can watch it at SOMTV.com. We also have some very big news coming up about the fourth SOM film, Cup of Salvation, so stay tuned for more of that in upcoming podcasts. That news is going to come fast. Without further ado, Claire Kopy and Brent Kroll doing a little German wine 101.
Hello, I am Claire Kopy, and I am joined today by Brent Kroll. Hi, Brent. So nice to have you on. How are you doing?
Thanks for having me. Doing great. It's a great week. Yeah. Great day to be talking about German wine.
Oh, yeah. Always great to be talking about German wine. You are a very busy man. You wear a lot of different hats. You are the owner of multiple very popular establishments in the DC area, including Maxwell Park, which is a wine bar, Pop, which is a fizz bar, which I just love. So it's all sparkling there, right?
Yeah, pretty much everything that's carbonated awesome. Alcohol, from like seltzers to ciders Ooh. To sakes to, you know, sect.
And yes, on top of all these things, you are also an ambassador for the wines of Germany, which is perfect because, as you mentioned, we're going to get pretty nerdy about German wines today and we're going to need all of that expertise of yours. I should also mention, speaking of busy, you're getting married this weekend.
Getting married on Saturday? Yeah.
Holy moly.
A lot going on right now.
Do you have some German wine standing by to help with the stress?
Oh, yeah. We always have some German wine hanging around too. She's actually an intro sommelier that does events and
nice.
We constantly have wine around. So I definitely crack that out whenever possible.
You pouring German wines at your wedding?
I will have those at our rehearsal dinner, but not at the wedding nice. Specifically. The rehearsal dinner is more of like the full out party. I feel like the wedding's kind of, it's like a little, you know, a little more formal.
Well, that's amazing. Congratulations. You've had to study German wines pretty extensively, especially for that advanced exam and for your career. I'm going to dive in with a really big overarching question here. So for you, what sets German wines apart from other wine countries, other wine regions?
I think that a lot of times people think that German wine has the misconception of like sweetness. Like I feel like if you interview like 100 people, they're going to tell you that. If you interview, you know, 500 people, they're going to say that. And they're going to say the hard to pronounce like German words. but I'm not going to say those because for me, those are all true, but it's low hanging fruit. I think for me, it's that people think that Germany is a one trick pony. So it suffers from that the way like Argentine Malbec suffers from people thinking that's all Argentina or Gruner for Austria. People think of German. I've had Riesling. I know Riesling. I'm done. But there's just a ton of diversity, ton of regions, ton of varietals. So I think you're really just, you know, kind of selling the country short immensely. And then, you know, there's so many other factors that go into it in terms of like the vineyard site and what's going on with like what they're planting and how climate's changing and stuff like that. But I think that the best answer is that people just try to take the path of least resistance, which is not learning how to pronounce some of these words and just like, you know, get the 1, 2, 1, 2, 3 German Riesling facts.
Yeah. I mean, it is pretty synonymous with Riesling, which is pretty cool though at the end of the day, because that's when you think of other wine growing countries in Europe, right? Like their most planted white grapes, like France is like Uni Blanc, and who knows about like most of these regions aren't synonymous with a white grape like Germany is, but it's a misconception that it's this one trick pony, that it's off dry Riesling. And that's really just scratching the surface because like most of the wines being produced out of Germany are dry anyway, right?
Yeah, I mean, especially with like the new laws and Grossgewächs and stuff like that. I mean, it's really taking a turn. I know when I was there, I wasn't concerned about wines being too sweet. I was concerned about the acidity, like just ripping my face off, like going from like winery to winery. Like it wasn't like the pain of like getting like, you know, like chubby bunny stack of like pancakes, like sugar bomb. It was like, oh shit, like my face and my teeth are going to hurt. Like my gums are going to be in pain. I compare it to when I've been to sparkling regions and I taste out a tank. Mm. That's what it felt like, acid boot camp, like that type of feeling where it's like you're getting like a trailer to the movie about what the wine's going to become. But it's like you're like chewing on like, you know, just sourness, like figuring that out.
So your enamel's gone. You've got acid reflux.
Yeah. But off-dry German Riesling's an amazing thing too. Like I think of it as like Somm candy. Like the flute-shaped bottle, even though it wasn't invented for this, is like the perfect thing to like take out of the neck if you're like cutting loose. And I mean, that's like, it can go highbrow, lowbrow, which is like everyone's favorite way to kind of just like hang out in life, I feel like too.
I mean, there's very good reason why Riesling is such a popular grape in our industry. But outside of Riesling, there are a ton of other grape varietals that are being produced into some really excellent high quality wine. What are some of the other amazing wines that Germany has to offer?
Yeah. So, I mean, one of the favorites, I kind of stock this and age it. I buy it out of Magnums, which I request from like German Wine Collection, who's the new importer. It used to be with Rudi Wiest, but Hans Viersing, he does a Silvaner out of a Buchsbottle out of the Franken. Again, this is probably why it didn't get a ton of commercial success. Like the bottle, Buchsbottle, is modeled after a goat scrotum. So I guess they just, you know, you need a lot of wine if you're staring at goat scrotums and modeling bottles after it. But the Buchsbottle is a really cool bottle. And you get the Club, the Eichhofen, the Erselage from Hans Viersing, I think is one of the best German white wines, like non-Riesling, but like goes toe-to-toe. You put, you know, 5 or 6 years on a Magnum of this, it's probably going to retail for like $60 or $70. And it's just like a world-class Silvaner. And they get these like wax bean and like olive oil and like bitter phenolic notes to it. The acidity is a lot softer than Riesling. So that's one that I definitely try to gravitate towards. Another one would be, I visited Pfeffingen when I was in Germany. And I think that he is considered by a lot of people to do the best Schrebe in Germany. A lot of times, when you have wines that are just loaded up with like floral notes, like Tarantas can sometimes give like this pickle juice note with like too much perfume. Viognier can get kind of like flabby. So when you're talking like floral notes, it gets kind of like this jalapeno, bell pepper, like herbal arugula, like white flower note to it. It has like tart peach on the finish. It's still like really acidic. So I think that that's just like one of my favorites as well. But there's a lot more past that. I mean, there's great like Weissburgunder too.
Just Pinot Blanc for anybody.
Pinot Blanc, Grauburgunder, like Pinot Gris, you'll find there too. Becker does a really good one of those too. It takes on a little bit of skin contact, so it has that color of like that skin contact Pinot Grigio from Italy, like the Ramados and stuff. Even just talking about like these few things, that's like the tip of the iceberg, and there's just like, you know, so much cool stuff. Yeah, you can find like Elbling, which is like the OG, like national grape of Germany. It's a grape that, you know, once was like the prolific, like, you know, white grape of Germany, and it has a lot of endearing characteristics to it, and it's super easy to drink as well.
Yeah, there's so many, and those are just, you know, white grapes that you're talking about. Then we're getting into, you know, they're making some really excellent rosés. Like apparently rosé production's gone up a lot recently, and who doesn't love a good rosé?
And like one of the hardest words to pronounce or people to wrap their head around is there's a Spätburgunder Weißherbst, which is like, they're like light pink, like Pinot Noirs that can sometimes be pretty white. Schaefer Froelich does a great one. Hexmer does a great one. Robert Weil used to do one of my favorites, but they actually like sadly gave up on it. I think 2008 was their last vintage for it. But you get some of these like white or
hopefully they'll bring it back.
Yeah, I hope they bring it back. they went to all Riesling, which I don't blame them for. So they don't have any Pinot Noir anymore, to my understanding. But their Spätburgunder Weißherbst is one that I used to buy every single year. They used to make like 20 cases of it. But I think if you find like Spätburgunder Weißherbst and you introduce people to white Pinot Noir, a lot of the white Pinot Noirs I see around the world, like I think Domaine Serene has one out of Oregon and they put oak on it. And I see a lot of ones where it's like pretty ripe and pretty oaky. Germany, they're just like almost all the ones I see, it's neutral or no oak, a light pink color, super dry. Refreshing. You get that Pinot Noir flavor. It's dry. I think it's the best place for like no to light skin contact Pinot Noir in the world easily.
There's actually at Whole Foods, they're doing the Von Winning Pinot Noir Rosé there for like $15. One. So that's a great one for anybody looking to try a really amazing, dry, refreshing rosé from Germany. That's a great find at your local Whole Foods. It's not a plug for Whole Foods, by the way. I just found it there. And I wanted it, so I got it.
As if Bezos needs an extra plug.
Jesus, seriously. So convenient.
I visited Von Winning. That's a great winery. I feel like sometimes when people come into my bars, I was kind of taught this in hospitality at a young age. They might say like, hey, I've been drinking, you know, like really, you know, inexpensive sweet stuff. Or I've been drinking like this, like, you know, cupcake or, you know, whatever bastard wine that is that's like they make a million cases of. I always think when people come in and they say this stuff, it's like, okay, cool. You have like a gateway drug to trying better wine. And I right. think that what Von Winning does is they make a whole lineup of like approachable wines. Rosé, oh, yeah. Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Noir. They don't make anything that isn't like non-consumer friendly. And I think that's like a really good German like gateway drug for like just wineries in general.
Producers like that as well that are making especially their bottles, like the physical bottles themselves and the labels a little more approachable. I think that's probably something that's happening with this new generation of young winemakers wanting to make these wines approachable. And the fact that the bottle doesn't say Spätburgunder, it says Pinot Noir makes it a little bit easier. But that is a question I have is like, you know, it's really hard to wrap your head around that language unless you speak it. I have a German mother and I still can't pronounce these things properly. She just yells at me all the time. But
my last name's German and I can't say it properly.
Did I say your last name correctly?
No, I can't say it properly. My last name's like Kroll, but it's right. like if you say it like a German, it's like Kroll.
Kroll.
Like, you know, like you're being, yeah, exactly.
Kroll.
Even though
it's very elegant.
Even though it's not German, he's Austrian, but I try to like think in my head like I'm the Terminator when I'm speaking in German because it gets me to pronounce it a little bit crisper. So like, yeah, das Spätburgunder.
Yeah. You know? I always kind of sound a little more fabulous to me. But there's that barrier with the language, but there's this fine line then of do you like completely get rid of the language on the like labeling? Like you still want it to have the sense of identity. So as we're moving forward with this new generation and trying to make it more accessible, like how do you do that while still keeping it German?
It's really interesting. So like a lot of times on my wine list, like I'll put Spätburgunder, but then in parentheses, I'll put Pinot Noir. So it's like user friendly. Yeah. I've seen some sommeliers or some lists where they'll put like, you know, Grauburgunder, Weißburgunder, Spätburgunder, and they won't put the words there because they're like, well, you should kind of know. And that's not like an approach I take. For me, it's all about like the consumer, about the guests. I've seen wineries that have labeled Spätburgunder for years, like switch to labeling Pinot Noir. So I think that they might want to appeal because I think the US is like top one or two markets for German wine in the world. So I think that they're definitely trying to, you know, help with making it more user-friendly like that. Because even though it's a few grapes to like memorize, I think that it's better if they put probably, like I do on wine lists, I like to see both of them on the label. But, you know, if it's tradition for them to put like the German word, it can't fault tradition. But I don't like when sommeliers have a wine list and they just put the German word and they don't spell it out a little bit more for guests.
And help them out. Because it is hard. It's hard enough with like French wine regions too, where like you don't really know the grape unless, you know, you're a Somme and you know. But then German is just like this extra level, I feel, for a guest.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, like appellations in France, you're expected to kind of like know what the grapes are. But even then, I think there's like certain regions where if you're in like the Languedoc or Roussillon, they might like put the grape in parentheses. Yeah. So I think try to be kind when you can is a good approach.
I agree with that. Let's talk about this next generation of German winemakers. It's got this incredible rich history of winemaking, but what are these new winemakers doing differently than their generations before them to make this kind of young, fresh, hip, accessible?
Yeah, I have seen some like winemakers like in their 30s and stuff, and they seem to be making wines that are like, they're not like too sweet. They're not too dry. It's like Goldilocks style. They're right in the middle and they're making wines that instead of a lot of candied white peach, I tend to get like some lime zest and like green apple. Mm-hmm. And I'm giving generalizations because there's a lot of young winemakers, but I would take this as a moment to do. So many people ask me, they're like, what's the next big region, the next big thing in Germany? And from going there, the Mosel is already the Mosel. So if you're looking at like real estate in the Mosel, it's like capped out. Rheingau and Pfalz are, I think, going to get better, but like they're still pretty like prestigious and stuff. The Rheinhessen is where I'm seeing like young winemakers like making wine a little bit cheaper, the land's a little bit cheaper, and they're just like killing it. So I think that like Keller's the one that brings all the attention to the Rheinhessen, but you've got a lot of producers in the Rheinhessen where if you were to say like 10 years from now, who's going to make the biggest jump? I think it's the Rheinhessen. Just a plethora of young winemakers that can find a way to get in there and make wine easier than like breaking into like, you know, the Mosel.
Yeah. I mean, then hopefully their wines are a little more price approachable than Keller. Not everybody can drink Keller.
Just to be perfectly honest, when I was in Germany, I figured out there were like two wineries where if you were there and you wanted to buy their wines, you pretty much couldn't. And that was Keller and Egon Mueller. Like you can't really just like seek those out and find them. Cause there was a guy on my trip who kept insisting like, where can I buy Keller? Where's Keller? Cause like, you can't get any in like the US. And I think our host was like very polite. But our host was just kind of like, hey, even if you show up at their doorstep, they're not going to sell you wine.
Yeah. Heavily allocated.
But it's nice to have a lightning rod for that region though. So sure. Even if you never get it, I don't need to just like wax poetic on like, oh, this is so amazing. You're never going to have it. I mean, you see a lot of sommeliers do that in like Burgundy. Oh, I had this mm-hmm. like, you know, 1960 something like Grand Cru Burgundy and you're never going to taste it. But let me tell you how amazing it is. I really, that's not like my style. I mean, like it's a lightning rod for Rheinhessen, like I said, but like definitely look at like, you know, different producers, especially if you pay attention to importers. I think Von Boden has like my favorite Rheinhessen producers.
It's a good call.
And I think that's one is like, if there's Soms out there looking like, hey, what like portfolio should I look towards? Like, I think Von Boden has Rheinhessen covered like deep.
And there's just so, I mean, there's so much room for a lot of these regions to be, you know, more like up and coming as well. Cause there's 13 different winemaking regions in Germany. It's not just the Mosel. It's not just the Pfalz. There's so much to offer there. They're all making so many different things. It's an insane amount of variety. There's too much to cover. Although we should talk about Sekt, as you mentioned. Let's talk about the amazing sparkling wines coming out of Germany that need more attention. So good.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen some where they don't come to the US, but like, I think Romland is probably, and they're also out of the Rheinhessen. There, I think when you're in Germany, they're considered like the best that there is. They're with a German wine collection and we get a couple of their, I feel like slightly like entry tier like cuvées, but they have stuff that's got like over 10 years on the lees that kind of reminds me of like Bollinger that just picks up like richness and stuff. They're sold. Also, when I was going to like amazing wineries, like I was at Robert Weil and I was like, hey, where is your sparkling wine facility? Like, how do you make it? And they're like, oh, we give it to Romland. I was like, at Künstler too. I was like, where's your sparkling wine production? Where do you do it? They're like, oh, we give it to Romland to like do it. So not only is Romland like one of the best, but they're also like hooking up like finishing wines for some of the best wineries in Germany. So that's cool. I think like it had a little in between where I think it was out of the US and then came back, I think roughly like a few years ago. But if you're going to stock like a sect that's kind of just like, you know, the creme de la creme that you can put on your wine list for like $100 roughly, maybe a little over 100, like Romland's like where it's at. You also see like Sloska Deal with like 7 years on the lees and they're doing like extra brute sect and stuff like that.
I must have amazing texture.
You see all the time. If you talk about like looking at like Whole Foods or like in, you know, like retail, I think you see the Losen one a lot, extra dry, not like in the brute level of sugar, but that one's like super approachable and great with like spicy food. But Sekt, you get really good Pinot Noir sects, and then you get really good Riesling sects, and then they can be just like wildly diverse with like lees aging and fruit profiles and stuff like that. I'm starting to see more Petnats coming out of Germany too.
So Sekt, again, for anybody that is unfamiliar with it, is a traditional method sparkling wine coming out of Germany, which is why Brent is talking about all of the lees aging, all the secondary fermentations happening in the bottle. So this is a great option, usually incredible value wines. They're incredible wines if you're looking to expand your sparkling profile. Look at Sekt. You mentioned, I like that you mentioned Petnats, which is very trendy right now, very old school. And another very trendy thing, which is, I think it's great, is that the general public in general is looking more towards sustainability. And especially the wine-consuming public, they make it a priority in their wine selection. I've seen a lot of people do that, at least, you know, out here in California. It's a big deal. It's lovely to see that push. But Germany's, they've been doing that, you know, organic winemaking. A lot of places might not have the actual certification because it's a whole process, but they've been practicing for how long? Like, this is nothing new for Germany. It might be trending everywhere else, but for them.
Yeah, I mean, like local wine for me where I'm from is like Virginia, and it's really damp and it's wet and it's kind of like Bordeaux and you kind of have to like, you know, the within reason French term is like, you know, lut raisonné, which means like if we have to spray, we spray and stuff like that. And I think that like there's certain places of the world, like I think of Germany almost like I think of Chile. Like if you're on the mountains, like in the Andes, you can have like an 800 hectare estate that's biodynamic. You could be like biodynamic, like falling out of bed because your weather conditions are so good.
So why is that? Can you explain that a little bit more?
It's super arid. It's super like mountainous. You're not going to have a ton of problems with like mildew and mold and rot and bugs and stuff like that. And there's certain places in Germany that are like more damp or more wet where they need things that are like more resistant. I think that when you're on the side of a mountain with like a heavy incline, especially like up against a river and stuff, and it's like, you know, you're getting winds and breezes and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I think that Germany, sometimes they have to like skew towards like more mildew resistant stuff. Like there's certain places where like if you're prone to mildew, you're going to plant like Dornfeld or Oberspätburgunder, which is like a little thinner skinned and more like easier for like mildew problems. But mm-hmm. I mean, you're also going to like sometimes welcome some of your Riesling grapes to get botrytis in those areas and stuff. I just think there's a little bit of a rise with Demeter certified, which is like hyper biodynamic to me. It's a mm-hmm. little crazy, but very technical. And I think there's around 60 some Demeter certified German wineries right now, but I think that's on the rise. But I think the VDP does a lot of good with keeping people in line and organized and keeping people, you know, practicing sustainable, going towards organic and biodynamic and stuff like that. So I've definitely seen that there's a lot of care for it and it's on the rise.
How do you think climate change is affecting the winemaking?
There's like an all-time favorite fact that I got. I was at Rebholz in Germany, like visiting them, and they were talking about like different climate changes. And they were basically talking about Burgundy, their temperatures 20 years ago. And that's like what they have in the faults like now. So essentially like Burgundy is kind of, everyone says every year it's getting like crazier and crazier. It's just like a broken record. But like if they have a shit vintage or a great vintage, the price goes up, the price goes up. But faults, they used to have, you know, sometimes struggling in certain areas to even get ripeness for their Pinot Noir. And now those great vintages in Burgundies or in Burgundy in like the 90s, like early 2000s, it really like the last great vintage, I feel like before it started to like get warmer, I think was 2002. And then 2005, it started to like jump up. So you're looking at like these great cooler vintages in Burgundy. And that's what the Faults has right now. So if you're going to lay down like, you know, a $30 to $50 bottle of Burgundy, or you're looking for something that's like super impressive, like I think that Faults Pinot Noir is like showing what climate change is doing.
Is there a downside though to it getting warmer in Germany in some regions?
I don't think so, because I think like temperature wise, like Faults is one of the warmest. Like certain textbooks, they nickname it like the Tuscany of Germany. And I saw zero concern when I was there. I only saw like happiness about the changes. Like I've seen despair in other parts of the world, but in Germany, they were just like, you know, like
it's cool.
It's great. Das good. The villagers. Das is good. Like it's, yeah, das good. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I didn't hear anything bad about it, honestly.
They didn't have Weisswein though for the first vintage in 2019, which is a little sad.
Shoot. I guess they left that stat out. They were. Yeah. I didn't think about that. That's a tough one.
Not that that's a huge, like, you know, I don't think there's a huge market, at least in the US for that, which is, again, you know, this late harvest where the grapes are frozen and then made into a very delicious, very rich and decadent dessert wine. But first year they couldn't make it. Didn't get cold enough. The grapes didn't freeze. But we have world-class Pinot Noirs coming out of the fault. So what's the trade-off, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think that a lot of people, especially in today's wine drinking world, like I have a much harder time selling even like a half bottle of Eiswein versus like a magnum of Pinot Noir.
Which is a shame sometimes. I love dessert wines, but they're a tough sell sometimes.
For sure. Some of the best wines in Germany, I think the price point and sometimes the sugar makes it a little difficult. I definitely see like younger wine drinkers. I think the craze for like sweet wines was mostly the 70s and 80s. And then you started to watch it get like a little bit lighter 90s, 2000s. But now a lot of the wine drinkers, it's kind of split. And it's a lot of, it's this way with sommeliers a lot too. They either are like, give me something just like raw and like glue wine, natty, like weird. Or they're like, give me just like a classic beauty. But Germany has both, and I probably lean more in like the classic beauty for like their Pinot Noirs that they do.
Is it hard working on the floor, is it hard selling German wines to your guests because they have all these misconceptions about it? Or are you able to like give them taste of things and just completely blow their minds?
That's a really good question. And there's like a lot of programs where you set up your program where you don't really have to like act like a concierge to like guests, and the program kind of sells itself, and you put Pinot mm-hmm. Noir at a price point, and you know, no matter where it's from, Pinot Noir at a price point is going to sell. When people come into my bar, everyone on our staff is kind of trained to be like, do you like light body? Do you like full body? Do you like earthy? Do you like fruity? Like, are there any of the things that you've had that you've liked or disliked lately? So I always tell people that like at Maxwell, we act like a concierge, like throwing a house party. So we wear t-shirts and the music's kind of loud and we're not really like, you know, buttoned up or like formal feeling for a wine bar. But we don't really go in being like, would you like German wine? Have you had, you know, red from Germany? It's just like, we just ask questions about wine in general and then mm-hmm. say like, let me bring you a taste, or you should try this, you know? And I feel like that makes everything sellable as long as the wine like holds its weight.
And these wines definitely do.
Yeah.
Definitely do. And it's just, yeah, I mean, and it's talking about like food pairing too. You have such variety, such like an insane amount of diversity in all these wines that we've talked about. Again, we've just scratched the surface. So much more than Riesling, obviously, but we're talking about these incredible Pinot Noirs, the sparkling wines, the rosés, all the other whites that they have to offer. And so it's, Germany's such a wonderful place to go to turn to food pairing.
Yeah, I've actually, so I used to work, was one of my last fancy jobs. I worked for Alain Ducasse at a French restaurant, and we had a mostly French list, but there were some times where like I couldn't find wines to pair. It was like be like spring vegetable season, all these green vegetables. Mm. And I feel like the, you know, there's a lot of cliches where it's like, I think Suave and Grüner get mentioned a lot, but I was pairing a lot of German wine, especially like Silvaner, those Spätburgunder Weißherbst, like Schrebes and stuff, especially because like with wine pairings, the thing that I always try to do, well, there's a few things. I try to layer flavors. So when you have intensity of flavor in the wine and intensity of flavor in the food, you want them to kind of like go toe to toe and layer flavors into each other. The other thing is like texture with texture. Even though Germany is not like one of the hottest countries in the world, they typically have like a certain roundness to them, like a certain like juicy quality. So when you have like food that has kind of like a juicy quality or texture like that, like we would do like a foie and chicken pressé. We would do like an asparagus with like a fried egg and stuff like that. And the German wines, without clashing with like green vegetables, they had the texture for it too. So some of my favorite pairings at a French restaurant were pairing German wines.
Well, that says everything. I mean, I feel like I could talk with you about an hour for just like your experience and pairing with these wines. But thank you so much for sharing your time and your knowledge and talking about this amazing country and its beautiful wines. If you are in the DC area, or you're traveling to DC, you should absolutely go visit Brent at Maxwell Park, Pop Fizz, or check out his cocktail bar, Trouble Bird, as well. Have him pour you a glass of Sekt, a glass of Spätburgunder Pinot Noir, and you won't regret it.
Yeah, we definitely always stock aged German Riesling, too. I'm working on my Spätburgunder collection, but you can always find like something with, you know, 10 plus years on it on my list at Maxwell. And we make t-shirts a lot, too. Like,
what slope got you doing? This place is so cool. I need to get a flight.
That's the shirt we did with Wines in Germany. So I'll have to get you one of these.
Please do. Yes. And I'll have to come visit and drink some back vintage Riesling or some beautiful false Pinot Noir with you.
Yes. Down.
Awesome. Well, cheers. Thank you again. And congratulations. Have an awesome time getting married this weekend.
I will be dancing it up and I will be drinking some Riesling from the neck at some point.
All right. Well, thanks, Brent. Cheers.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. I really appreciate Claire Copey and Brent Kroll for all of their information, and I want to thank Wines of Germany for their support. Thank you, John Adams, for producing today's episode. Everybody, stay tuned for our news coming up on Cup of Salvation. That is coming very, very soon. And go to somtv.com to watch Tournament of Bubbles. Everybody, be safe and drink something nice for me.